construction of new facilities last week.
Our companies are taking a further leap. Over the next decade, Korean chipmakers will invest over 510 trillion won, or $450 billion. Samsung Electronics will construct large-scale production lines for memory semiconductors and system semiconductors at its factories in Pyeongtaek and Hwaseong, and SK Hynix will establish a large-scale production base in Yongin.
This year, a shortage of semiconductors caused production delays and suspensions worldwide. Even South Korea's major car manufacturers Hyundai and Kia had to shut down periodically for lack of the key component.
South Korea produces about 20% of the world's semiconductors. The industry also plays a very important role in the South Korean economy, accounting for 20% of the country's exports. And recently, the price of semiconductors has been quite high, increasing profitability.
Samsung is South Korea's largest company and number one semiconductor producer. But its de facto chief, Lee Jae-young, is in jail, creating a degree of uncertainty amid the massive investment plans.
Samsung's Lee Jae-young is scheduled to complete his two-and-a-half-year prison term in July 2022 for bribing South Korea's former president. But calls are growing in many sectors, including almost two-thirds of the general public, according to a recent survey, for Lee to receive a presidential pardon, considering his company's importance to the South Korean economy.
Samsung is also reportedly planning to construct another U.S. plant with a $17 billion investment. President Moon this week visits the U.S. as American officials seek to reduce tech dependence on China. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Palestinians have taken to the streets across the Gaza Strip after a ceasefire between Gaza and Israel went into effect Friday at 2 a.m. local time.
This is a joyful moment for all Gaza. This is the victory for Ramadan, the Eid, and Jerusalem. We will return all the occupied lands, all the cities. If they call us, we will be the first to be with them.
We were watching the media outlets. The victory of the resistance is the victory for all the Muslims. The Palestinian resistance returned the dignity for all Muslims.
People in the occupied West Bank also hit the streets shouting slogans in support of people in Gaza and Palestinian resistance groups. Similar celebrations were held in several other cities around the world. People rallied in the Jordanian border town of Soimeh to celebrate the Palestinians' victory in the conflict. A car convoy drove through the streets of the Iranian capital, Tehran, in solidarity with Palestinians. Thousands marched in support of the Palestinians across Pakistan and denounced Israel's attacks on the people in the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank. The ceasefire was brokered and is being monitored by Egypt, which has in the past been involved in intermediary efforts between the two sides. The truce put an end to 11 days of attacks that killed scores of people in the Gaza Strip, including women and children. This wasn't the first time the besieged territory came under Israeli fire, but this time Palestinians turned the tables against the regime and launched unprecedented rocket and drone attacks on Israeli cities, inflicting damage and casualties on the enemy. The resistance groups have described the latest flare-up as a point of departure in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
I announce this great victory that our fearless resistance has achieved. It is a divine, strategic, and composed victory during this phase of the struggle with the Zionist enemy. They hit the enemy with a painful and severe strike, which will leave deep marks on this entity, its society, military, security, and political institutions, as well as on its future in the Holy Lands of Jerusalem.
Our fighters were able, through rockets, mortars, and cornet shells, to turn enemy cities and sites into an unfit place for life. We thank the Islamic Republic of Iran, which supported the resistance.
In the meantime, several Israeli political and military figures have questioned Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's motives for launching the offensive on the Gaza Strip and approving a ceasefire without any preconditions or a strategic breakthrough for the regime. Netanyahu's political opponents speculate that the premier ordered the strikes after he failed to establish a coalition cabinet to put an end to Israel's political stalemate. But the developments over the past 2 weeks have shown that the next time the regime ventures an offensive against Gaza, it could face consequences more serious than a political vacuum in Tel Aviv.
A
anti-Israel sermons were delivered in Islamic schools across Pakistan. Tens of thousands of people came on the streets alone in Islamabad to voice their support for the Palestinian people. There were similar rallies in other major urban centers to protest over Israel's latest round of nearly 2 weeks long attacks on the Gaza Strip, which left scores of Palestinians dead, many of them women and children. Officially, Pakistan observed the Friday as a Palestinian day to express solidarity with the innocent Palestinians. On the streets, people in Pakistan rage with anger like elsewhere in the Muslim world since Israel attacked and desecrated Islam's third holiest mosque after forcible eviction of Palestinian residents in eastern Jerusalem, Al-Quds, and subsequent unilateral war it imposed on Gaza.
I want for government, he declared jihad. There is the only one solution to liberate Palestinian. It's only way jihad.
The disappointment and feeling of hopelessness among people against Organization of Islamic Cooperation, or the OIC, are growing to a tipping point. No longer people in Pakistan seem to be taking 57-member bloc of Muslim countries as their genuine representative body. People in this protest believe that OIC's inaction has emboldened Israel's aggression upon unarmed Palestinians. Therefore, they want Pakistan and other willing Muslim countries for a joint military action against Israel. This demand was partially echoed during a recently held conference of foreign ministers of OIC, where some of the non-Arab states proposed to set up an international force of protection to prevent similar aggression by Israel in future. Not everywhere in Pakistan, the pro-Palestinian rallies were safe. At least six were killed and over a dozen others were injured after a bomb attack hit a rally in Chaman, southwest of Pakistan. Many suspect pro-Israel terrorist group behind the terror attack.
They want to prevent Pakistani public to attend these rallies. These elements, they fear that if Pakistani public attend these rallies, Pakistani government will get under pressure and they will definitely do something against Israel.
Anti-Israel sentiments run high in Pakistan, given the regime's policy of systematically killing innocent Palestinians and evicting them from their homes over the course of decades. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Supporters of Palestinians who struggle for their rights and justice gathered in front of the headquarters and branches of RAI, the Italian national broadcaster, to protest against what they call biased coverage of the ongoing conflict between Israel and Palestine. The demonstration took place in several cities, including Rome, Milan, and Naples. Protesters shouting "Shame" and "Israel go away" accused the national broadcaster of misrepresenting the complexity of the latest Israeli war on the Gaza Strip, as well as ridiculing the truth.
The reports on the Israeli-Palestine conflict that RAI TV has been airing were not up to the standards one would expect from a public broadcaster. Italian people have been clever enough to understand the truth. It's no coincidence that pro-Palestine demonstrations were held in 25 cities across the country. The reports never mentioned the Israeli occupation, never once.
People attending Rome's demonstration said the Italian media outlets faced no ethical dilemmas when it came to not reporting on the Israelis who were trying to steal Palestinians' houses in Sheikh Jarrah in Jerusalem or Quds.
Italian mainstream media generally covers Palestinians when they are either protesting or physically confronting Israeli aggression, with the outcry broadly described as escalation of violence. Quite the contrary when it comes to describing Israel's increasing night raids on Palestinian homes and attacks by Israeli settlers on Palestinian farmers, Italian media hardly refers to an escalation of violence.
Last Saturday, thousands of people flooded the central square in the Italian capital to show their support to the Palestinians, but no mainstream media outlets bothered to cover the demonstration.
The media didn't didn't elaborate on what was happening in Italy. They showed, you know, London, New York, other places in the world, and they didn't really focus on all of Italy was protesting against this occupation.
In 2002, an Italian journalist was killed by an Israeli attack in Ramallah. 9 years later, another journalist was killed in the Gaza Strip. I think the public broadcaster should honor the memory of these two men by reporting on the Palestinian plight in an unbiased manner. As usual, supranational, political, and economic interests are prioritized over objective reporting.
A national demonstration dubbed Stop the Israeli Occupation will be held in Rome on Saturday, May 29. Thousands of Italians are expected to join the rally from all over the country. Max Civili, Rome.
Bishop Talbot Swan, a highly respected civil rights activist, expressed the sympathy and solidarity among the African American community for the Palestinians as outrage over Israel's actions has continued to grow.
If any people should resonate with what's going on in Palestine, it's black people in America. Even when we look at what's happening on the streets in our nation, many police departments across America actually go to Israel to be trained by the military in so-called counterterrorism strategies. And then they come here into black communities and employ those strategies on black citizens. So we fully understand their struggle. It resonates with us, and we stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people.
For many, the fact the U.S. government funds Israel while reparations owed to black Americans have yet to be paid is hypocritical.
They can find nearly $4 billion a year to give to Israel, but they can't find any money to give to African Americans who descended from enslaved Africans. It's a travesty. It's a shame. And we're not asking for a handout. We're not asking for you to do us a favor. That's money that is owed. That's a debt that the United States has yet to pay.
Like many faith leaders, Bishop Swan reiterated his continued support for the Palestinians in the face of racist apartheid.
Oppressed people all over the world are watching what's happening. We are standing in solidarity with you. We are pushing and pressing for governmental structures to condemn the violence, to stop the funding of terrorism, because that's exactly what it is. And we want them to remain steadfast, to be strong, and to know that we are behind them.
The demands for the U.S. to stop funding Palestinian oppression and to implement justice for black America will continue as long as the status quo remains in place.
Support for the Palestinians has undoubtedly intensified, with millions of people around the world condemning Israel, demanding an end to the occupation of Palestine. Richard Sudam, London.
A ceasefire took hold on Friday in the Gaza Strip as Israel and Hamas agreed to halt nearly 2 weeks of fighting that left hundreds dead and parts of the impoverished Gaza Strip destroyed. There were no reports of violations early Friday, though each side said it stood ready to retaliate for any attacks by the other.
After the ceasefire, I am sending words of thanks and appreciation for the Palestinian resistance and for the countries who supported Palestinians with both money and weapons, especially the Islamic Republic of Iran that offered everything and stood with Palestinians to a great extent.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip took to the streets and held celebrations of their victory, embracing one another in front of bombed buildings. Palestinians in Gaza could not mark Eid al-Fitr festival at Ramadan conclusion due to the Israeli airstrikes. On Friday, postponed Eid celebrations were held throughout Gaza.
This is a celebration of our victory. We celebrate winning and teaching the inhumane Israeli regime a lesson that we won't remain silent over its crimes, even if it costs us everything, even our children and homes. This is the road of our resistance till Palestine is free.
We spent days of Ramadan waiting for aid, and then this escalation started, but we all supported Al-Aqsa and Sheikh Jarrah in Jerusalem. Gazans did all of this to support Palestinians in Jerusalem. We didn't count on any other country. We supported each other and defended Al-Aqsa.
More than 10 days of attacks killed at least 240 Palestinians in Gaza, including 66 children, wounded more than 1,900, and damaged critical infrastructure and thousands of homes, according to officials. The clashes began when the Israeli regime attacked worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque and started its eviction plans of Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in East Jerusalem.
We are all here now in high spirits. We have witnessed three wars, and today Gaza didn't give up defending Palestinians. We are glad of this victory, and we appreciate the efforts of our resistance that did everything to support us and defend our rights.
After days of Israeli strikes, people are here celebrating their victory, stressing to support the Palestinian resistance in the face of the Israeli violations of Palestinian rights. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Get up. Good morning.
Good morning. Your captain speaking, and we are currently cruising over Iranian skies.
ایستگاه شهید بهشتی مسافرین گرامی خواهشمند از جهت تعیین مسیر به تابلوهای راهنما توجه فرمایید.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. How is everything?
Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
the supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it. And leave no grief unless Thou takes it away. And leave no enemy. And leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of In the name of Allah, the best of the names. In the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is His anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is His good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from Thee, O Patron of Beneficence.
The debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, targeting civilians, attacking the infrastructure, killing children, killing journalists, destroying media centers, and destroying residential units were all done by Israelis against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip during its latest onslaught. And in the occupied territories, the Israeli regime has continued to steal the land of Palestinians and attack the Al-Aqsa Mosque during the month of Ramadan and beyond. What does it take for the international community to condemn and punish the Israeli regime, and how much more do Palestinians have to suffer before that regime is stopped? Stay with us as we take a look at this month's debate. I'm going to start it off in Gaza City and talk to correspondent Ashraf Shannon. Ashraf, thanks so much for being with us. Well, Ashraf, tell us right now the overall situation. I mean, I've been looking at as far as the losses and the number of buildings and destruction. Just fill us in on the assessment today.
Yes, Marzia, today is the third day of the truce between Hamas and the Israeli regime that's been mediated by Egypt and Qatar and the UN. Right now, the human situation is only getting worse as more bodies are found under the rubble. The officials in Gaza realizing how much damage that has been sustained. All of that has not been cleared yet. All the numbers that are coming out by some satellite stations or figures by the UN are not the real figures. You have to understand, it's not only about money. You have to understand also that the loss, it's not only the physical loss of people, the loss of memory, the loss of everything dear to people here who've been displaced over and over again by the Israeli regime. Wanton killing and maiming of women, children, and elderly people took place under the watchful eye of the international community. It's about time that the world rises up and stand up for the rights of the Palestinians, the people who have been oppressed by the Israeli regime for decades, Marzia.
Any hope from Gaza that actually the Israelis will be held responsible committing these crimes against humanity, basically going against the Geneva Convention? Any hope this time around that that will happen?
Well, Palestinians here, they always hear about the international community, about the International Criminal Court, the Rome Statute, but they need concrete things, real things happening. They want Israel to be held accountable. They want Israeli leaders who sent those pilots to bomb their homes to held accountable. And until that is done, there's nothing can help the Palestinians here.
Thank you so much for that update. Ashraf Shannon, correspondent on the ground there in Gaza City. I'd like to welcome my guests to this debate. Zakaria Odeh, coordinator of the Civil Coalition for Palestinian Rights, Al-Quds, and Ted Schmidt, former editor, Catholic New Times out of Toronto. Thank you both for being with us. I'm going to start it off with Zakaria. Now, since 1948, there have been crimes taking place in Palestine that, according to international law, could be considered as war crimes. And if you agree with that, why, after 73 years, is the international community impotent in stopping the Israeli regime in committing crimes against the Palestinian people?
Thank you. Good evening. Thank you. Yes. In fact, for the last 73 years of Israeli occupation since the Nakba, you know, we talk about the Nakba of the Palestinians, it took place in 1948, but it has been going on every day through the various Israeli policies. I mean, Israel have been for these years implementing a policy of forced displacement, where they have been taking over land, building settlements, expanding illegal settlements, Israeli discriminatory urban planning system, restriction on building for the Palestinian Arabs in Palestine as a whole and in Jerusalem in specific, demolition of homes, because of the restriction on obtaining building permits. So Palestinians, they built without a permit because the Israeli institution, they don't provide the Palestinians with a permit to build houses. And if you build without a permit, then the houses will be demolished. So it's very important to mention that there are nearly 22,000 homes that are built in Jerusalem without a permit. What does that mean? That these homes are under the threat of demolition. So, as well, the closure of Jerusalem, the restriction of access and movement for the Palestinians from the West Bank and Gaza to access the city of Jerusalem. You know, Jerusalem is one of the main holy cities for both Christian and Muslim.
Let me just jump in here, Zakaria, because what I understand is that today you were in the middle of some attacks. Can you tell us what happened today in Jerusalem al-Quds that you witnessed?
Yeah, there have been a continuous and systematic harassment by the police in various neighborhoods of Jerusalem. As you know, one of the main neighborhoods I think you are aware of, Sheikh Jarrah, it's a neighborhood which has been since 1956. These were Palestinian refugees who were forced to leave their country as a result of the Nakba. And now there is an Israeli decision to evict and to force displace. We are talking about 73 families, nearly 500 people that the Israeli court has took a decision to evict them from their home and to replace them with Israeli settlers. You know, the settling settlers in the occupied territories is a clear violation of Geneva Convention. It's a war crime according to Rome statute. It's not only that what has been going on for the last weeks, that the Israeli settlers have been storming Al-Aqsa Mosque. Every day they have been entering Al-Aqsa Mosque, one of the main holy places for the Muslims. So they enter the mosque, they do Talmudic or Israeli religious pray in the mosque, while they have been preventing the Palestinians from the rest of the West Bank and Gaza to access to the city of Jerusalem.
All right, stay with me, Zakaria. Let me get Ted in on this debate now. Ted, according to the Geneva Convention, war crimes are defined as these. I'm going to read the top four. Willful killing, torture or inhumane treatment, willfully causing great suffering or serious injury to body or health, extensive destruction of property. Now, none of these would be hard to prove when it comes to Israeli crimes. Just a video of the regime destroying buildings and killing whole families would be sufficient. So what will it take for the international community to make that transition and actually start holding Israel responsible for war crimes?
Well, it is happening. I'll start with quoting one of the great Israeli Americans, Jeff Helper, who's been living in Israel for 40 years. He asked the question that many of us are asking, how do they get away with it? For generations, they've been ignoring the Geneva Conventions. They've been ignoring international law. But, Marcia, let me just remind you what the big change is. In 1967, the Six-Day War, there were only three American networks. What has changed the whole equation here is the extraordinary proliferation of the Internet and social media. Mm-hmm. The great researcher Norman Finkelstein, in one of his books, made the point, this time you've gone too far. And around 2008, people began to totally get the picture that they weren't getting the picture. And now with social media, people are beginning to understand for the first time. Sadly, it takes a massacre, another massacre, and I would say another one, starting in 2008, 2014, 2018 at the Gaza Wall, where 2,000-3,000 people are killed with nothing sent to Israelis. So my point is that we in North America live in the culture of Disneyland. It's hard to keep track of things. There's so many diversions. But now it's even on the front page of the New York Times, a very good article. I never thought I'd see it. So social justice takes a long time. I've been at this for much of my adult life, and I know things move slowly, but now they're catching up. People around the world, you'll see international demonstrations, and I'm relatively hopeful now that people begin to see exactly what's been going on. Zechariah has pointed out exactly what's happening on a day-to-day basis to Palestinians. Most North Americans do not see this. And so they're finally starting to see. And so that's a big point for me, is that we're finally even getting the New York Times to print decent articles, and Toronto paper, we're beginning to get some balanced coverage.
And Ted, I just want to stay with you for a minute, because you talked about most North Americans not getting the main story. And with that, we look at the situation when it is talked about as far as Palestinians. Rarely in these Western stations do they talk about the Christian Palestinians, that Christian Palestinians exist. Jewish Palestinians exist, as a matter of fact. Right. Why do you think that is never talked about? We saw Christians being attacked for Easter of this year by the Israeli regime forces, but you never see that really talked about in Western mainstream media.
Well, there's a lot of things they don't talk about in Western media. One of the sad things, because I've been to Israel, Palestine three times, is so many Christians have left. They're among the best educated people, and they've just lost so much hope. They can't wait to get out. They are very much a minority in a Muslim area, and so, you know, there's not much media coverage of that. You're exactly right. So I can't answer to that, but that's exactly true.
Isn't it odd that the countries that claim that they are Christian-based, that even for them, because they happen to be Palestinian Christians, then they choose to even ignore the Christians, not only in Palestine, but we can see throughout this region. Don't you find that odd in general?
Yes, I do. But a great Palestinian writer who worked in America most of his life, Edward Said, his great book, Orientalism, there's been a bias here in the West about anything to do with the Muslim world, but that's changed. In 1948, when Palestinians were dispossessed of their land and they lived in camps, now they're among the most educated people in the Arab world, and they hold important positions at American universities. It's extraordinary. My own city here is one of the most diverse cities in the world, and when I was a kid growing up, I grew up in a Jewish neighborhood. I never knew anything about Islam. I never knew any Muslims. But the extraordinary change has been these voices are beginning to be heard.
Okay, great. Stay with me, Ted. Let me cross back over with Zachariah. Zachariah, now we have at least 65 Palestinian kids that were killed in this latest Israeli onslaught on the Gaza Strip. I mean, are the lives of Palestinian children important for the international community or not? And we should be hearing and seeing such outrage as what has taken place these 11 days, especially the death of this many children.
Unfortunately, the international community double standard when they deal with the issues. So when it comes to the Palestinians, so we feel that our lives and our children's life is not really that important, because I think, you know, this war against Gaza has been going on every few years. They go the same way and they destroy the buildings, they destroy the infrastructure, they kill people, they kill children. I think Israel is doing that because they have this impunity. I think it's time to stop the Israeli impunity and to take action. I think Israel will not continue to commit all these crimes and all these atrocities against the Palestinian people, whether in Gaza or the West Bank, and especially in Jerusalem, without the support or without the closing eye by the international community. Mm-hmm. So that's what we try always to talk to the international community. I think it's time that we should act. You should put pressure to stop this Israeli ongoing crimes and policies and atrocities.
And Zachariah, I'm so sorry because I'm short of time, but do you think with this, we're looking at the so-called international community, that it just proves that resistance is the only way? Your take on that?
Yeah, of course, because now we have been hearing, I think, now, for example, after the last war on Gaza, the last clashes, we have been hearing that the European Union, they are talking about there are other elements or actors in the occupied territories, which they meant in Gaza, like Hamas, that we need to talk to. We can't ignore. We need to consider. So unless people die, unless there is destruction, unless blood is really going down, so the international community will not move and will not do. And even in spite of all what's going, in spite of all these losses by the Palestinians, with their children, lives, destruction, still some European countries are blaming the Palestinians, and still they're saying that Israel has the right to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. We as a Palestinian, we don't have the right. We have no right. Our life is not really important, is not really matter. And it's important to say that all these escalation during the last few years of Israeli crimes and Israeli violation and atrocities has been taking place with the full support of the Trump American administration.
Okay.
You know, he was partner with the Israelis in all these colonization, apartheid, and crimes that are being committed against the Palestinian people.
All right. Well, Ted, what about that? I mean, it appears that Palestinians can't count on international law, international bodies to do anything. But what about the international civil society? We witness many, many protests around the world condemning Israel. Do you think that these actions or pressure can continue, and that the civil society in the world can actually make this change and put pressure on Israel, like what we saw against apartheid South Africa?
I think
this big player in this whole equation is the United States. Change will not happen within Israel, Palestine. And the good news for me is that young Jews are understanding this, and they're saying, not in my name. American Jews are, many of the young people are having a transformation. They look on the screen and they say, this is not what Judaism is. They're moving away from Zionism, which is a false creed, and many are seeing it. And now you have wonderful people like Peter Beinart saying, I'm out. Zionism is not my Judaism. And so it's these very important, very well-educated young Jews who are in the streets. They're saying, not in my name. And I'm very, very hopeful that a change is afoot. It's not going to be the same thing, but it's going to happen in America. Slow but sure.
And Zachary, your thoughts and your perspective, what is it going to take for Palestinians to attain victory and total liberation? We've seen actually something interesting with the Palestinians being in solidarity, whether it's the occupied territories this time around or Gaza Strip. Yes. Your take.
Yeah, I think what's happened during the last few days, it never happened before. You know, it united the Palestinian people everywhere in the West Bank, in Gaza, under so-called the Green Line or 48, in the diaspora, in the camps, in the Arab countries, in Europe, everywhere. So what happened, the Israeli aggression during the last 2 weeks has been uniting the geography and the people as well. So I think that the solidarity and the support, whether in the Arab area, RG area, or in internationally, we have been witnessing an increase of the solidarity and the support by the international community, the people. I think what's after this war and this uprising in the old part of Palestine is not the same as it was before. I think this gave a message to everybody, to the Israelis, to the Americans, to the international community, which says that people will not subject to all these colonial settler apartheid regime. They are rejecting the American policy here and the American support to the Israeli governments in the occupied territories and in Palestine. I think we have a hope that things will change. There is a change, and in addition to what our friend he talked about, there has been changes within even the Jewish community, the young generation in the U.S., in Europe, everywhere. So this gives us a good hope that there will be a good opportunity for a change for this situation.
And on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with us on this debate at Press TV. Zachariah Odei, coordinator of the Civil Coalition for Palestinian Rights out of Al-Quds, and Ted Schmidt, a former editor, Catholic New Times, out of Toronto. Thank you both. And always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off right here from our international studios in Tehran. Thank you and goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en. From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Close up, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. What a fragrance. Oh, wow. It's the sweetest smell of the Gole Mohammadi. Today I've come to my grandma's home, and right now I'm inside her yard where there are many shrubs of Gole Mohammadi. My grandma loves Gole Mohammadi. She dries these flowers and puts them in her tea. When she was younger, she used to make delicious and fragrance jams or the petals of Gole Mohammadi, but now that she has aged, she's not in the mood of cooking jams like those days. Well, let me go inside the home to greet with my grandma and then ask her what she likes me to bring her as a souvenir from Qamsar. You know what? I'm going to Qamsar tomorrow. Amsar is globally known by its Gole Mohammadi. Gole Mohammadi, with the scientific name of Rosa damascena, is a type of rose which is highly resistant against dehydration. There are different types of rose flowers. Among them, the Damask rose grows in Iran. This flower grows in different regions of Iran. The most popular region in which grows the Gole Mohammadi is the city of Qamsar, located in Isfahan province. Qamsar is situated 27 kilometers to the city of Kashan. Qamsar is popular for its rose water and growing the best quality of Gole Mohammadi in Iran. Gole Mohammadi have several characteristics, including having aromatic pink half-filled petals, oval-shaped petals, 5 to 7 leaflets, and a petiole. Gole Mohammadi is a shrub with many pressed, wide, fine, hook-shaped thorns. I am now in Qamsar, in a vast plain of Gole Mohammadi. Local people are picking Gole Mohammadi, and this atmosphere is filled with the fragrance of these flowers. The fragrance which has filled here is much stronger and much more pleasant than the smell of the Gole Mohammadi shrubs which grow in my grandma's yard.
We arrive here at 5:30 a.m. in order to pick the flowers. We keep working until 4 or 5 p.m. After weighing the flowers, we send them to Qamsar for the process of rose water extraction. We put 30 kilograms of the flowers in 70 liters of water. We put the pots lid back and let the mixture boil for 4 hours. During these 4 hours, the steam passes through these pots, then is cooled and finally changes into rose water. We extract nearly 40 liters of rose water.
The
essence of Gole Mohammadi has medicinal advantages. This essence is also used in the cosmetic industry for making perfumes or creams. This essence is also exported to France.
Well, I'm now in a traditional tea house, and I'm going to drink a cup of Iranian tea along with some Gole Mohammadi, which I have put in my tea. What a tasty tea! It has a sweet fragrance as well as a unique taste. And I've bought some Gole Mohammadi as a souvenir for my grandma. It would make her very happy because her Gole Mohammadi shrubs are not enough for her everyday feast of tea and Gole Mohammadi. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Good morning!
Of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.